Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We are 2 weeks out from an election, and right now you're either really excited or really exhausted. Dakota political junkies John Hunter and Roger Whittle are with us today for a look at a governor's race that's capturing some national attention, anticipation for some polling numbers, and insight into this year's ballot questions. John Hunter is publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. John, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks, Lori. I'm glad to be here.
Roger Whittle, managing editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. Roger, thanks as well.
My pleasure, Lori.
All right, let's start with the governor's race, because there's quite a few notices of Billy Sutton on the national stage. And Roger, let's start with you. Is that good for Billy Sutton's campaign, or is it going to work against him as far as how many national news organizations want to talk about this sort of cowboy candidate for governor?
Well, I think the more positive press he gets on either a state, local, or national basis is going to do nothing but help his campaign. He's a really intriguing story. Former professional rodeo guy, paralyzed in an accident, getting close to be governor of a state that hasn't elected a Democratic governor since, I think, like the 1700s, something like that. So, yeah, it's a great story. I'm not surprised the national press is jumping on it, and yeah, I think it can only help him.
John, there hasn't been a Democratic governor since before Billy Sutton's been born, which is perhaps a relevant way to look at it.
You know, I was thinking about that, so I had a chance. I did a little research on governors, and I discovered in those 40 years, though, we've only elected four Republican men to that office. Partly is because Bill Janklow served 16 of those 40 years, and then you had George Mickelson and Mike Rounds and Dennis Dugard each serving 8. So, it's 40 years is a long time, but 4 candidates in a row isn't necessarily a lot.
That's smart. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. So, you know, we did
wait
have a couple
a minute.
Of those. Harvey Wolman was in there, as you may remember. He was lieutenant governor as Dick Knipe went to become the ambassador to Singapore. And then Walter Dale Miller, of course, filled in the remaining part of a term for George Mickelson. But I'm with Roger. I think that the kind of publicity that you get nationwide is doesn't hurt South Dakota, and it is an intriguing story.
All right, so let's talk about how close this race is, because it seems like it's a close race, but we're not really sure. John, there's some polls coming out soon. How much are we looking forward to that announcement?
Well, you know what I think about polls, Lori. I'm not a big fan of them. I think they tend to be some of them are skewed. If they're sponsored by the candidates, of course, they'll ask the question, like, do you really like our candidate, or do you really like them a lot?
Right.
I think it's close enough for voters to be encouraged to go to the polls. I think if it's an 80-20 split, then people tend not to show up as much. This one, I think, is close enough that we all should get out there and cast a ballot. And so that's what I think is important for us to learn out of any of these polls. Is it close enough for us to get involved? And it is.
All right. So at 1 p.m., the Argus Leader is releasing independent polls that they have those results in for the governor's race at 1 p.m. today. ArgusLeader.com on Thursday at 1 p.m., they have the release of the U.S. House race current polling numbers. And on Friday, they talk about those ballot measures, constitutional amendments, and the presidential approval rating in the state of South Dakota. Roger, because they're independent polls, does it make a difference? Is it a different conversation then?
Slightly. I pretty much agree with everything John said about polls, but I like them anyway because it's political news without the negative attacks that have become so prevalent in political races these days. So I always look forward to these polls. You just have to realize that they are not, 100% valid all the time. There are times when the polls will say one thing and the election will say another. So take them with a grain of salt, but you can enjoy them. And I see no reason why this isn't going to be an incredibly close poll for that the Argus is doing. Both of the candidates' polls themselves are close. So when that's the case, the independent one will probably be close as well. And I agree, it's a great thing. It'll keep the race interesting and get more people out to vote, which is a good thing.
So the thing I don't like about polls, John Hunter, is when you know, the candidates have done their polls and you can just tell what they learned to focus on in the polls, so then they'll only say one thing again and again. And the talking points and the sound bites get really super condensed. You can almost tell in an interview what their polling numbers have told them listeners are going to respond to. That's my pet peeve with polls. It's you can see the evidence of it in different ways, and candidates who sometimes would have a 5-minute answer to a complex question, now have a 5-second answer that they won't get off of when you ask the same question in a different way. It's frustrating.
Well, I understand, Lori, and I see that also as well. I think it's a valid point. I think there's, in addition to that, I think there's a little bit of a geography tendency in these polls too. They're accurate enough, or at least indicate where a candidate may need to go, whether it's as broad as East River, West River, or it's a urban, rural, or so I think the candidates will start scheduling appearances and so forth in different demographic groups and different pockets. The one thing nice about a close race, though, is that the candidates are fully engaged and they're getting out. If it's a blowout, you wouldn't see the leader probably working as hard. I think that might be a generalization, but I think a close race gets both of them out, and getting talking to people and in front of people and allow voters to ask questions, and that's a good thing for democracy.
Right. Roger, talk a little bit about how Kristi Noem, what are the positives of her campaign? What has she done really smartly and really well up to this point? And, where do you think she'll head in the next 2 weeks?
Well, I think when she focuses on the issues, she comes across as very well. I mean, she's big on education and supporting our tech schools, which is, of course, important for me and people around this part of the state. When she sticks to the issues, I think she's doing a really good job. Her campaign sounds really good, but some of these negative ads that I've been seeing lately, in fact, on both sides, is kind of a big turnoff. And it's a shame that politicians hire outside firms to run their campaign, because this is, going negative works. And until that stops working, I think we're going to see that kind of stuff.
Right. John, how about Billy Sutton? Where have his strengths been on this campaign trail? Because he's doing something right to be as close to Kristi Noem as he is right now.
Well, I think he's trying to appeal to a broad range of South Dakotans. I think if he had a far-left message and just targeting Democrats, that's not enough to win. So I think he's come out publicly and said he is not as supportive of an income tax, state income tax, which has been on the Democratic platform. Hiring a former, or not hiring, but nominating a former Republican person as a lieutenant governor candidate. And so I think trying to say, look, I'm much more in the middle, which I think, frankly, a lot of South Dakota is. And so I think he's trying to appeal to a lot of, independents, Republicans, and so forth. That's, I think, probably a healthy thing. We hear so much about extreme views in the media and, people who are the loudest, maybe, where there's, a lot of moderate people in South Dakota who aren't loud. And I think he's trying to appeal to a broad section of the middle.
Right. Roger, do you think that most South Dakotans are willing, or maybe we already do this, do we put aside party and really look at the most qualified candidate who we like the most, who we think is going to be best for the state, or do we really just vote on those party lines?
Well, historically, we've been able to vote for the person and not the party. I mean, we have a history of some Democratic national representatives, Tom Daschle, George McGovern, Stephanie Herseth. But lately, in the last 20 years or so, it's been kind of going in the other direction. And maybe this is just the year that changes. I think that would be good for everybody if it did, if people would start voting on the issues and not the R or the D after somebody's name.
Right. Let's talk about some of those ballot questions. And we did a two-hour special on this program where we really, looked at them in depth with perspective from both sides. So we don't need to cover everything today. People can find those conversations on our website. But John, let's start with you. Are there particular ballot questions or constitutional amendment proposals that you find are most significant, intriguing, you're hearing a lot of talk about?
Well, the idea of banning outsiders, people from outside the state from helping finance campaigns in South Dakota is, I think, is something that, regardless of how people feel and how that ends up on November 6th, I think it'll be constitutionally challenged to say that because your residence is somewhere else that you can't participate in elections. And that's just kind of a fundamental free speech. And so I think it probably would not pass muster at that level. But that's a long battle if it does happen to pass. I understand the rationale behind it, and Speaker Mark Mickelson is a proponent of that, saying, you know, being frustrated that some, you know, group from far away comes to South Dakota to try to get an initiative passed and puts a lot of money into it and so forth. But to try to ban those is a real challenge. So I think that, to me, that's the most intriguing out of these. There are others too. I mean, there are several ballot issues that I think they're all worth researching and voting on.
Right. Roger, if something passes, say an Amendment W passes, an anti-corruption measure, it's a challenge for state lawmakers to look at whatever comes their way next after initiated Measure 22. Are they going to have to handle it things differently than IM-22?
Well, you know, that's a good question. We went through this a few years ago when Marcy's Law was passed, which, you know, on the surface sounded like a good idea. It passed, and then when you actually put it into practice, you learn some things that maybe we wouldn't have voted for had we known before. Like, for instance, when we in the newspaper business, when Marcy's Law was passed, if there's a fatal accident somewhere in the state, we can no longer publish the name of the person killed in the accident, which I don't think people would have, that's not what people wanted to come from that bill. So there are, ramifications for these things, and once they're passed, yes, they have to deal with them. And I think we did that a little bit with Marcy's Law, and if some of these measures pass this year, we'll probably have to go back and clean some of those up too.
Yeah, John Hunter, that Marcy's Law had an interesting implication just recently with a law enforcement officer, an officer-involved shooting. The officer's name was not released because that officer was a victim and had Marcy's Law protection. Maybe another surprise for some people who, not that they would disagree with it or agree with it, but maybe that wasn't something was thought of either, is that any officer who is defending themselves
right in
the line of duty, we are no longer going to know that officer's name.
Well, it's kind of a work in progress. And the good news in South Dakota is that is not necessarily a partisan issue. It has not attached to political parties as much as 22. But you remember when we made changes to that, then the people who sponsored Marcy's Law from elsewhere was involved with the changes. And so kind of a cooperation. So maybe there will be continued, keep the spirit of the law in place, but put together some practical procedures or practical portions of the law that eliminate the problems that Roger was referring to.
Roger, any other ballot questions that you think are particularly interesting that you're hearing a lot of buzz about?
Well, I like the tobacco tax measure that is getting a lot of airplay from folks trying to not get it passed, mainly the tobacco companies, saying, South Dakotans hate taxes, so you come out with a TV commercial saying, this measure is going to raise taxes. Well, it raises taxes on a pack of cigarettes, which, and then that in turn will benefit the tech schools and hopefully get fewer people to smoke. So I think that's an interesting one. And I think most South Dakotans are seeing seeing through the negative attacks on that particular measure. I was just on vacation and saw cigarettes in Hawaii were selling for $11 a pack. So I think adding a dollar to our $5 pack is not as big of a deal as the tobacco companies are making it out to be.
And that one's been interesting. Just here in the studio, we had a Democrat state legislative candidate today who said, you know, it's a blank check and you shouldn't vote for it because the money's not going to go there. And a Democrat yesterday who said, yes, it's a good idea. We need to support education. This is a creative way to do it. So it's not necessarily, strictly a party line issue either.
Right. And even that the blank check issue is being refuted by both sides, the people who wrote the bill saying, no, the money will go to where it's supposed to go. And
here's how. Yeah, Mark Nicholson on this show said, no, we learned our lessons, and we've rewritten it in a way that, and he kind of explained that with the, now I can't remember, Board of Governors or the new Oversight Board is what he was arguing.
Right, and then he just had a letter to the editor in our paper where he says, I know, I wrote the bill, so that was good.
All right, let's close with just a little bit about, because I'm sure this is an issue we'll talk about in the future, the Keystone XL protests and how that's kind of become a campaign issue for the gubernatorial candidates, of people saying, if what happened in North Dakota happens in South Dakota, are we poised to handle it? Will it bankrupt counties? What are you going to do about that? John, do you see this as a big issue coming up in the state?
It is. It's a great issue to talk about, and I think from several different standpoints. And just to recap exactly what you said, Lori, is that if that comes to South Dakota and South Dakota counties are responsible for law enforcement and you have the same kind of things as the Dakota Access, would it bankrupt the county, take all their money and do this? And it's a really legitimate question. The harsh part of that I really dislike is that it's lawbreakers, essentially. I mean, if you go start things on fire or you shoot people or, I mean, all the kind of the bad things that we have all kind of agreed that are wrong or broken, why should taxpayers in a local jurisdiction pay for that? Well, part of it is we've already set up a system nationwide about how we pay for our law enforcement, and we do it at a bunch of different levels. The state has its own law enforcement thing, and counties and cities and federal government and so on. So this one happens to be a local issue. I'd love to see actually the criminals in these cases take some financial responsibility for these, but you know that never kind of works out that way. The state did emphasize though that even though the losses they don't financially kick in for a while, it has to be a relatively big number that the county faces, that they would still help in a law enforcement way. In other words, they would send the National Guard or whoever they have to help with that circumstance. It's just later when you sort out the money and who's going to pay for what at this. But that public safety is number one, and I think everyone is glad to hear that, both from a county and a state and maybe even a federal issue standpoint, is that public safety, you know, protecting people, protecting property is a top priority.
Yeah. Roger, anything you'd like to add to that?
I would. You know, the story was produced recently by South Dakota News Watch, which is a great organization that is producing some really good journalism in the state on an in-depth basis that most newspapers these days can't. The story that they produced was exceptional, and I encourage everybody to read it. It was interesting and potentially, affects a lot of people.